were true, but who wanted to sit in the hospital without someone who loved you? The thing to do was call one of the people Carmen trusted most in the world. Of those three, B was out of town, and Carmen had misgivings about Tibby and hospitals. She called Lena. Lena didn't answer her regular phone or her cell. Not surprising, since she often didn't carry the cell. Carmen didn't feel like leaving another crazy girl message. She called Tibby. By some act of fate, Tibby picked up after the first ring. "Can you come to the hospital?" Carmen begged, her voice runny with tears. "My mom's water broke, and David is out of town, and I have to find him before my mom's doctor gives her medicine to get the labor going. Can you keep her company until I get back?" "Yes," Tibby said instantly. "I'll be there in a minute." "Keep your cell with you, okay? I'll call." "Okay." They both hung up. Carmen's call came not long after Tibby woke up. It had been a long night. It was tiring, after all, staying up till dawn watching a tree, climbing down that tree, and then getting locked out of your house for a few hours and not getting into bed until after 7 in the morning. It was. Ask anybody. And it was surreal, sitting in a chair next to Carmen's mother, on a bed in a labor room at the hospital, listening to the fetal monitor bleep. It was made even more so on 3.5 hours of sleep. Tibby wondered at the mountain that was Christina's belly. She remembered pretty well her own mother's pregnancies with Nikki and then Catherine. She was 13 for the first, and almost 15 for the second. She hadn't found the whole thing at all amusing at the time. "But fear not," she reminded herself, and silently Christina. "We at the Tibby Corporation have a new policy toward younger siblings, and even babies generally. We like them, and like for them to be safe. We even admit that we love them, though not more often than is necessary." "How are you feeling?" Tibby asked. She somehow felt that much as she cared about Christina, she wasn't the best person for this job. "Just fine," Christina said, through a mouth that was tense. Her eyes were distracted. "Are you sure?" Suddenly, Christina was doubled over.
"I think so,"
Christina said grittily, clenching her jaw. Tibby was on her feet and fluttering nervously.
"Should I get the midwife, do you think?"
I don't...
Christina couldn't talk, which said to Tibby she should get the midwife. The midwife, Lauren was her name, was filling out papers at the nurse's station.
Lauren, I think Christina is maybe having some trouble."
Lauren looked up.
"What kind of trouble?"
Tibby raised her palms skyward. She was not a doctor, she was not a nurse, she wasn't a mother or anybody's husband. She couldn't even vote yet.
"I don't know," she said.
Lauren followed her into Christina's room.
"Are you having contractions?" she asked Christina.
Christina sat up, holding her stomach.
"I'm not sure."
Lauren looked at the paper spooling out of the monitor.
"You, my dear, are having contractions."
"But I'm not in labor."
Christina said it half as a statement and half as a question.
"I would say you are in labor."
"But it's too early,"
Christina said. Her eyes weren't focusing quite right.
"I thought tonight..."
"Tonight we'd induce if you didn't go into labor naturally. You are going into labor naturally from what I can see."
"But David and..."
Christina closed her eyes and put her chin to her chest.
"Another one, right?" Lauren said. "You're getting into a pattern, every 7 minutes or so. Let me check your cervix, okay? Lie back and open your legs."
Tibby did not like the sound of this. She floated toward the door. Lauren was one of those plain-faced, plain-spoken people who like to say and do embarrassing things as flatly and as often as possible. Like Tibby's eighth-grade health science teacher, who said the words breast and anus so often, you'd think she'd never heard of pronouns. Tibby loitered in the hallway until Lauren appeared at the doorway.
"She's at 3 centimeters, Lauren announced.
"I don't know what that means," Tibby said.
"It means her cervix is opening. That's what happens when you're in labor. When her cervix is all the way open, that's 10 centimeters, she'll be ready to push the baby out."
Tibby had one more question, and Lauren couldn't very well answer it for her.
"How did I get here?"
"How long will that take?" Tibby asked.
"Hard to say for sure, but it's still early labor. It'll probably be a few hours at least."
Tibby hoped,
really and truly hoped that Carmen and David would be back by then. Lauren was looking at Tibby seriously. She actually had very pretty brown eyes. Her no-nonsense look was countered by a streak of dark purple liner under her eyelashes. Tibby, you need to get in there with her. She's a little freaked out. She could use some support. Lauren turned to go.
Excuse me, Tibby said politely, but I am, Christina's daughter's friend, if you see what I mean.
Lauren shrugged. Yeah, but you're who she's got right now. Frantically, Carmen called David's cell phone again and got his voicemail again. She paced up and down the sidewalk at the entrance to the hospital. She called Irene, David's secretary, and got her voicemail. Why did important things have to happen at lunchtime? She called the family number at Lena's house and barked out a message that she couldn't come for Valia today. Somewhat hopelessly, she called David's cell phone again and hung up on his voicemail. She threw her bag on the sidewalk.
Carmen?
She turned around and saw Wynn. Of course it was him. He took in her general dishevelment and her teary eyes.
Are you okay?
My mom's about to have a baby and I can't find her husband, Carmen burst forth. Her water broke and the baby isn't supposed to be born for a month, but now they want her to have the baby tonight so she doesn't get some kind of an infection.
Carmen couldn't quite believe she was talking particulars about her mother's amniotic fluid with a boy on whom she had a crush. But she was scared and she wanted to do the right thing and she didn't even know how to do it. Wynn's concern was so apparent it was heartrending.
I promised her I'd find David.
Her husband?
Yeah.
Do you have any idea where he is? Wynn asked.
He's been traveling a lot for work, Carmen explained balefully.
She was walking in a tighter and tighter circle until she was basically spinning on the sidewalk.
We weren't on high alert yet because the baby wasn't due yet. I have to find him right now.
Her voice was climbing, tinged with hysteria.
Okay, okay. Does he have a cell phone?
It's not even ringing. He might be on a plane or something.
Or it might have run out of batteries and someone who offered to lend him her recharger might not have done so, she added miserably to herself.
You tried his office?
Carmen appreciated how much he wanted to help her. He was a good person.
His secretary was at lunch. I'm going to drive over there, Carmen muttered. What else can I do?
Can I come?
Wynn looked intent.
You want to?
Yeah.
She was now running toward her car and he was following her stride for stride.
Can you get out of work?
I'm on lunch break. I'm done with pediatrics for today and the old folks can do without my antics and my pocket change for one afternoon.
You're sure?
He looked at her as seriously as if she'd asked him to plunge to the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean with her.
I'm sure. I'm sure, I'm sure.
Carmen drove. She felt like Starsky and Hutch as they pulled up to the curb and leaped out of the car. He followed her to the elevator and then to the reception desk. Mrs. Barry greeted Carmen warmly, and Carmen explained where she was going without breaking her gait. Christina had worked at this same law firm since Carmen was a toddler. Carmen knew her way around the place. Carmen and Wynn staked out Irene's desk, and thankfully she returned from lunch 10 minutes later.
What can I do for you, Carmen? Irene asked, looking confused.
Carmen wore a bandana on her head, do-rag style, and her feet were in flip-flops.
We need to find David.
Carmen's intensity was such that Irene seemed to shrink back from her own cubicle.
I think my mom's gonna have the baby soon, Carmen explained, but don't tell anybody anything yet.
Irene, good soul that she was, got right with the program.
Oh my.
Briskly, she pulled up the calendar on her computer. Her long fingernails clickety-clicked on the keys until she got to the right day.
Your poor mother. We'll find him.
Carmen sometimes got the feeling that everybody rooted for her mother. She was probably like a poster girl for legal secretaries. She'd won the respect and ardor of a handsome young lawyer without even meaning to.
He has a meeting in Trenton this afternoon. He's renting a car there and driving to Philadelphia. He's supposed to stay in a hotel in Philly tonight. He has a meeting scheduled there tomorrow morning, and then he comes home. And wait.
She studied her notes a little more closely.
He told me he was hoping to stop off and visit his mother in Downingtown on his way to Philly.
Carmen was thinking. Do you know the number of the meeting place in Trenton?
Yes. Irene looked it up and called it. She went through several people and several bits and pieces of conversation before she hung up.
He left already.
Oh, Carmen chewed her thumbnail. How about the car rental place?
Yes.
Irene called them too. She listened for a bit and put her hand over the receiver. He rented the car and left about 25 minutes ago.
Shit, Carmen mumbled.
She walked in a small circle. She realized Wynn was watching her carefully, but she was too preoccupied to be self-conscious or even to consider all the ways in which she was diverging from good Carmen.
Do you have David's mother's number?
Irene winced.
I don't think I do.
She riffled through her Rolodex and then scrolled through her computerized version.
No, I'm sorry.
The address? Carmen asked without much hope. Irene shook her head.
I don't know David's stepfather's name, do you?
Carmen should have known it. She had certainly heard it before. But in her efforts to tune out most of the things David said, she tuned out this potentially helpful bit of information.
We should leave a message at the hotel in Philadelphia just in case, Wynn suggested.
Irene nodded and did it.
He hasn't checked in yet, but they'll have him call as soon as he does.
Carmen's brain was working fast.
Can you call the rental car company again? She asked.
Irene did it without asking questions. Carmen held out her hand for the phone.
Can I talk?
Sure. Irene handed it over. Carmen talked to a representative for a few minutes. As soon as she hung up, she looked at Wynn and Irene brightly.
I have something. They can't get a hold of David in his car, but they can tell us where the car is.
Really? Wynn looked impressed.
Yeah. And like I always say, thank the Lord for satellite systems.
She laughed at herself. I don't really go around saying that. Wynn smiled at her, also clearly relieved that they had a lead.
How far is Downingtown? He asked.
Irene shrugged.
I think about an hour and a half.
Wynn and Carmen looked at each other.
So let's go, Wynn said.
You think so?
Carmen asked, suddenly nervous about the extent to which she'd embroiled an innocent guy in her drama.
You sure you want to come with me?
His eyes told her she should take this for granted.
I'm sure I want to come with you.
Of course she found it in the last place she looked. If she hadn't found it, she'd still be looking. Susanna Brown. Lena walked into her father's study with expectations so low she would have been happily surprised if he'd taken a paperweight from his desk and thrown it at her. He was thumbing through a stack of papers on his desk. He was listening to Paul Simon. It was one of about three CDs he ever listened to, and he always struck Lena as slightly tin-eared and immigrant in his appreciation. The song was perky and polished, something about a camera that took bright color pictures. To Lena, the song was like an A-plus paper, a math problem where you showed your work, a form fully filled out. But it didn't sound to her like music. She liked her colors dingier. Her father looked up at her over his half-glasses. He turned the music off.
Do you mind if I make a drawing of you?
Lena had practiced saying this in her head so many times, the words had long ago lost their ordinary feel and had begun to taste funny in her mouth. He waved her to the empty seat across from his desk. He was prepared for this. Lena's mother had no doubt warned and mollified him. Lena's paper was already clipped to her drawing board, and her charcoal was squeezed into her clammy hand. She hadn't come in willing to take no for an answer. She sat down.
You don't need to do anything special.
She'd practiced saying that, too. He nodded absently. He didn't need to be asked twice. He was already back to his papers, but she noticed he kept his face angled straighter now, only his eyes cast down. The lenses of his glasses glinted, but his eyes within them appeared shut from where she sat. She watched him for a long time before she began to draw. She made herself do this. She didn't care if it made him uncomfortable. For a while, she saw what she expected. She could have drawn his angry face with not only his eyes closed, but with hers closed too. This was how she pictured him, and this is how he looked. She saw what she felt, and what she felt was his anger. She had certainly suffered for it. Why else was she here? She knew what she felt, but what did she see?
she began to wonder. Withdrawing, you were always pitting your feelings and expectations against what the cold light offered your optic nerves. Like the first time you tried to mix colors to paint water, you thought you'd be using a lot of blue and maybe green. But if you made yourself see, you ended up with a lot more gray and brown and white, and even weird, unexpected colors like yellow and red. And if you tried to paint it again, it would all be different. You couldn't paint the same water twice. She remembered once standing with her mother on a street corner in Georgetown and watching a painter at work. Her mother let her watch for a long time, and as they were walking away, Lena remembered asking how come he used so much brown. As a child, you were taught to see the world in geometric shapes and primary colors. It was as if the adults needed to equip you with more accomplishments. Lena already knows her colors. Then you had to spend the rest of your life unlearning them. That was life, as near as Lena could tell, making everything simple for the first 10 years, which in turn made everything way more complicated for the subsequent 70. And now her feelings about her father made a mask over his actual features. She had thought that her challenge would be to paint his anger, to confront it. But now she knew that wasn't the challenging thing. The challenging thing was to see past it. She stared at him without blinking until her eyeballs dried and her vision blurred. She wished she could turn her father upside down. Sometimes you could see things more truly when you forfeited your normal visual relationship with them. Sometimes your pre-existing ideas were so powerful they clubbed the truth dead before you could realize it was there. Sometimes you had to let the truth catch you by surprise. Lena looked away and closed her eyes. She opened them and looked back at her father's face, but only for a second. It could catch you by surprise, or maybe, if you were bold, you could catch it. She turned away and then turned back for a little longer. She was seeing more now. She was holding on to something. She took a deep breath, carefully keeping herself in this other visual dimension, this place where she saw but didn't feel. Her hand was finally connecting charcoal to paper. She let it fly. She didn't want to bog it down with thinking. Her father's face was no more to her than a topographical map. The mouth was a series of shapes, nothing more. The downturned eyes were shadings of darkness and light. She stayed there a good long time. She was careful not to blink too hard or too long for fear that this new way of seeing would abandon her. She wasn't afraid of him anymore. The scared part of her was waiting out by the mouth of the cave. The rest of her had gone in. She saw something in her father's mouth, a little tick, another tick, and then a sag. She wasn't scared anymore, but was he? The trick of drawing was leaving your feelings out, giving them the brutal boot. The deeper trick of drawing was inviting them back in, making nice with them at exactly the right moment after you were sure your eyes really were working, fighting and making up. And so her feelings were coming back in, but they were a different kind this time. They were guided by her eyes, rather than the other way around. Tentatively, she let them come. A good drawing was a record of your visual experience, but a beautiful drawing was a record of your feelings about that visual experience. You had to let them come back. She saw her father's fear, and it so surprised her she could barely contemplate it. What was he afraid of? She could imagine if she tried. He was afraid of her disobedience. He was afraid of her independence. He was afraid of her growing up and not being the kind of girl he could feel proud of, or the kind of girl Boppy would be proud of. He was afraid of being old and powerless. He was afraid she would see his vulnerability. But also, she suspected, he wanted her to see it. She felt her fingers softening around the charcoal. Her lines got looser. She felt sad and moved by these things she saw in his face. She didn't want to make it hard for him to love her, but at the same time, she couldn't deny who she was to make it easy. Her fingers were flying. The muscles in her father's neck quivered slightly with the great effort of holding still for her. He was trying. He really was. That moved her, too. After almost 2 hours, she set him free. "Thank you," she said earnestly. He pretended he didn't notice so much. She held the drawing board facing out as she left so he could peek at the results if he wanted to. He didn't peek.
But later that night, when she was going to bed, she tiptoed past the kitchen where she'd left her drawing of him propped on a chair. He stood alone, in the quiet room, and even though she just saw his back, she knew he was looking. Wynn offered to take the wheel so Carmen could work the phone. Half an hour into the drive, they had to stop for gas. He bought two Cokes and a bag of corn nuts. Carmen had never had corn nuts before, and she loved them. They could barely hear each other over the crunching, so they found themselves shouting, which they both thought was incredibly funny once they realized it. The laughter made Carmen's eyes start running again, and the salt made her lips burn. She was tired and punchy and worried and also happy that they were driving toward David and doing everything they could. By her calculation, they had 4 hours to find David and get back to her mom. He was only an hour away now. It would work. It had to work. She felt confident that Tibby could keep her mom company for the waiting part, and David and Carmen would be there in time for the inducing part when the real drama started. Wynn was a good driver. He was confident and sharp about it, and yet effortless, too. For some reason, the look of his hands on the wheel, at 10 and 2, Valia would have approved, struck her as masculine and even sexy. Furthermore, he had an excellent profile. Not a Ryan Hennessy profile, exactly. Wynn's nose was a tiny bit crooked, and his upper lip went out a little farther than his bottom one, but on him, it worked. It was fun how you could get away with watching someone when they drove. He concentrated on the road, and she braved a full look at him. They barely knew each other, and yet they always had a project together. It was the opposite of most of her romantic relationships, which were all form and no content. Carmen was infamous for writing out talking points to use with the boys she dated. She never searched for things to say to Wynn. "You're close to your mother, huh?" he asked her thoughtfully. "Yes," it was the good Carmen answer instead of the whole Carmen answer. "What about you?" "I'm close to both my parents," he said. "I'm the only one, so it gets intense sometimes." "Me too," Carmen chimed in. Then she remembered. "Until today, I guess." "Pretty strange, becoming a sister at the age of... how old are you?"
17, Carmen said.
17, he echoed.
"Almost 18. And you?"
she asked. These were questions they could have gotten out of the way on an awkward date 2 months ago, but somehow they hadn't.
19. "And yeah, it is strange. Stranger than I can say. I had a sibling for a short while."
He tried to say it lightly and conversationally, but it didn't come out that way.
"What do you mean?"
Carmen wanted to know, but she didn't want to demand anything.
"I mean, if you want to tell me.
I had a little brother. He was born when I was 5, and he died just before I turned 6.
"Oh."
Carmen's tears were so near the surface these days, even a 14-year-old tragedy concerning a person she didn't really know called them up.
"I'm so sorry."
"It was a long time ago, but he is part of my identity, you know." She didn't know, but she could try to guess. She nodded. "I still think about him sometimes. I dream about him, too. I try to remember what he looked like. It's hard to remember, though, either because of time or because of strong feelings. I sometimes think the stronger you feel about someone, the harder it is to picture their face when you're away from them." Carmen's tears were falling now, and she tried to hide them from Wynn. He would interpret her tears as belonging to good Carmen. He would think she was crying selflessly for him and his family's pain. Whereas bad Carmen was crying because Wynn had spent a lifetime missing a baby who'd been lost, and she'd spent a summer resenting a baby who hadn't yet come. Tibby was learning something about her future. She was learning that it would not include having children, not unless she adopted some. Christina was in hell, and Tibby could barely watch it. With each contraction, and they seemed like they were coming all the time now, Christina seemed to lose some of herself. When she came down, she was less focused, less coherent, less recognizable. Tibby glanced at the printout. One line followed the baby's heartbeat, and the other followed the quaking of Christina's uterus. It reminded Tibby of a seismogram. Christina had gone from a 5 on the Richter scale to about a 20. If Christina's stomach were California, then California would be under the ocean by now. Tibby tried calling her mother again, but there was no answer.
Alice would know all about this stuff. She would know how to help. She was dialing Carmen's cell number when a nurse appeared in her face.
You have to put that away, she snapped, pointing at Tibby's cell phone. It interferes with the equipment. You could get thrown out of here.
Tibby considered that possibility with a certain amount of longing.
Can you give her some medicine or something?
Tibby asked Lauren when she popped her head in. Tibby was afraid of this much pain. She didn't know how to get close to it. Lauren came over and put her hands on Christina's shoulders. You doing okay, honey? Christina tried to focus. It didn't look like the question made any sense to her. The answer was so profoundly no that the question hardly applied.
In her birth plan, she specified natural childbirth. That means basically no drugs, Lauren explained to Tibby. That's partly why she's working with me instead of an OB. Midwives don't prescribe the heavy stuff.
It didn't seem a good sign that they were talking about Christina rather than to her.
An OB is a doctor?
Tibby asked, wondering for a moment if a doctor wouldn't be a good idea right now. If she were Christina, she would want the heavy stuff. She would want the heaviest stuff and every bit of it they had. She would want them to knock her out so completely that she wouldn't wake up for a week.
It seems like you should make that plan when you're actually giving birth. Then at least you know what it feels like, Tibby opined, but Lauren wasn't listening.
Lauren was now studying the printout with some degree of interest.
Christina, let me check you again, hon. These contractions are coming fast and furious.
Christina was shaking her head.
No, I don't want to.
Her legs were clamped shut.
We'll wait until this contraction is over.
Lauren stroked Christina's shoulders in a way that was meant to be soothing, but Christina was not soothed. She was writhing. She pushed Lauren away.
I can't. I'm not ready.
Christina's voice was breaking up into sobs. Lauren cast a look at Tibby that seemed to say she was certainly the most horrendous labor partner any pregnant woman had ever been saddled with. Tibby did feel bad, not because of Lauren, she didn't really care what Lauren thought, but because of Christina. Christina was alone here. She didn't have her husband or her sister or her daughter or her mother. She had Tibby. Tibby's instinct was to get on the bed with Christina, but her muscles were fighting with her. They were remembering Bailey. And more recently, Catherine. Tibby did not have happy associations with beds and hospitals. Who did? Christina was in a ball. She was crying quietly. Tibby suffered a deep ache in her chest, climbing up to her throat.
I need to check you, Christina. I need to see where you are, Lauren said.
She's right there, Tibby felt like screaming. Leave her alone.
I'm not ready, Christina said, weeping.
Lauren tried to uncurl Christina, but Christina fought her off. Tibby couldn't stand it anymore. She got on the bed with Christina. She grabbed her hands and squeezed them hard. That seemed to get her attention. Lauren still pulled at Christina's legs.
She said she's not ready, Tibby roared.
Lauren looked taken aback, like Tibby had smacked her. Then, to Tibby's utter astonishment, Lauren put her face to the side of Tibby's head. She kissed her temple. As if this day could get any stranger.
That a girl, Lauren whispered. Fight for her. She needs you.
Tibby pulled Christina up by her hands. She looked into her eyes.
Christina, I'm here. Look at me, okay? Hold my hands. Squeeze them as hard as it hurts.
That was something Alice used to say to Tibby when she had to get a shot. Christina was coming down from a contraction. She looked lost, but slowly she zeroed in on Tibby. Tibby knelt by her.
I'm here. You're okay. Show me how much it hurts.
The pain mounted again in Christina's face. She squeezed Tibby's hands so hard Tibby saw them turning white. She tried her hardest not to flinch. The pressure mounted until Tibby half expected to see her 10 severed fingers lying on the mattress.
That's good, Tibby shouted. I feel it. That's so great.
Christina's eyes were tracking hers now. Tibby felt on some level that that was the right thing.
I need to check her. I think this is happening, Lauren said to Tibby under her breath. Help me, okay?
Tibby did not know what happening meant. She did not want to know what happening meant. She straddled Christina's legs so she was practically sitting on her, though carrying her own weight.
Tina, Lauren's gonna do her thing. Stick with me, okay? With my eyes. Are you watching?
Christina nodded.
Squeeze my hands. Can you do it?
Christina allowed Lauren to examine her cervix, though she was desperately uncomfortable. Tibby's hands were mottled white and purple.
My goodness, Lauren said breathlessly. This is fast, fast. Christina, you are 10 centimeters and ready to go.
Tibby stared at Lauren, dumbfounded. Wasn't Lauren supposed to do this kind of thing every day? Why did she allow herself to get surprised? She said this was going to take hours, as in several, not as in one. Did Lauren have any idea what she was doing? Tibby hadn't even gotten hold of Carmen. She hadn't wanted to scare her. She'd thought they had hours. She'd thought Carmen would still have enough time to get back. Now what? What were they supposed to do now? Christina started crying again. There was a whole lot of blood on the bed under Christina's legs. Tibby didn't want to show her fast-rising fear. If she panicked, where would that leave Christina? She needed to get them focused again. Christina was in a new kind of pain, making a new kind of noise. Tibby tried not to be alarmed. It wouldn't help. You need to push, hun, Lauren said. You're feeling the pressure, and that means you need to push. You're almost there.
No! Christina was suddenly livid. I'm not ready. I can't do this. David isn't here. Where is he? Where is Carmen? We took the classes. This baby is not due for 4 weeks.
In her anger, Christina had tuned herself right back in. She let go of Tibby's hands, rolled back onto her side, and curled into her ball. Tibby could see from her body that Christina was fighting a ferocious urge.
She needs to push. I can see it, Lauren said. Don't fight it, Christina. It's time to have this baby. You gotta let go.
She was trying unsuccessfully to get Christina's attention. Tibby tried pulling her up again, but Christina wouldn't budge.
Tina, will you look at me? Do you see me? You can do this. I know it.
Christina wouldn't look.
I can't.
We are born believing. A man bears beliefs as a tree bears apples. Ralph Waldo Emerson. Roughly 20 minutes south of Downingtown, Carmen realized there was another sizable topic she and Wynne hadn't considered.
Are you going away to school next year? He asked her without looking at her. He was bearing down on a slow Nissan in the fast lane.
She licked her lips. Yes? This was the obvious moment to say where she was going. It suddenly struck her how badly she wanted to say she was going to Williams. She wanted Wynne to think she was smart. She tapped her bare toes against the dashboard. But she wasn't going to Williams. She was going to Maryland, and she didn't want to lie to him anymore. She liked him too much to keep doing that. I'm going to Maryland, she said. She quelled the urge to spout her near-perfect grades and her academic honors. She left it at the truth. If he didn't like the truth, well, then that was a good thing to know.
Oh, did he find her disappointing?
What about you? She asked. It was strange that she didn't know. Carmen was a great student. She cared about that kind of thing. Most boys she assessed almost like a brand, and where they went to college added or subtracted from their cachet. Wynne was different. She'd gotten to know him from the inside, it seemed.
I go to Tufts, in Boston.
He smiled a little and tipped his head toward her.
I was kind of hoping you were going somewhere up around there.
I was, she felt like shouting at him. I could have. I almost did.
But she stayed quiet, which was good in a way, because when her cell phone started ringing, she heard it right away and snapped it open. It was Tibby, trying to be calm.
Oh my God. Oh no, tell me you are kidding.
Carmen roared into the phone. Tibby wasn't kidding.
We'll be there as fast as we can,
Carmen said helplessly.
What happened? Wynne asked.
She's in heavy labor, Carmen said, a little sob getting past her. It's going fast. She's asking for David and for me.
Man, Wynne muttered. He took his foot off the gas pedal. What do you want to do, keep going or turn around now?
Turn around, she answered.
As soon as he flicked the blinker, she thought better of it.
No, keep going. It's David's baby, too. We have to tell him. He'll be heartbroken if he doesn't even know.
Wynne seemed to think that was a good answer. He got back into the left lane of the highway and pushed the speed. He was going 85, and Carmen wasn't complaining.
The news shook her and sent her mind back to Bethesda to be with her mother. Carmen knew Christina was scared. She was probably in a lot of pain.
I was her labor coach, Carmen murmured.
She was close to her mother. Underneath everything was that. It wasn't just the good answer, it was true. How else could you explain how powerfully she felt her mother's distress? Her mother told her once that when you feel someone else's pain and joy as powerfully as if it were your own, then you knew you really loved them. Right now, Carmen knew she had the pain part right. The joy, well, she still had work to do on that. Wynne expertly took the exit for Downingtown. Carmen focused her energies on the map. She was a good map reader. They had the cross streets, and the car make, and the license plate number. That would be enough information, they both hoped. God forbid David had parked in an underground garage or something. The coordinates led them to a housing development. Carmen screamed when she saw the green Mercury. She screamed out the letters and numbers of the license plate. Wynne was laughing and yelling, too. The two of them stormed the front door of the recently built clapboard house. Carmen fidgeted, trying to restrain herself from ringing the doorbell more than twice. A woman appeared at the door. Carmen saw David behind her and immediately started waving and yelling. It was all a flurry after that. Carmen couldn't remember who said what, but 5 minutes later, Carmen, Wynne, and David were speeding south toward Bethesda, Maryland. I forgot my rental car, David muttered from the back seat, still whitish gray in the face.
It's okay. Somebody can take it back for you,
Carmen reassured him. She looked from Wynne in the driver's seat to David.
By the way, David Breckman, this is Wynne.
Was it possible that she didn't know his last name? Here they'd run the gauntlet of emotions. He'd experienced everything with her, from Valia's friable ligaments to Catherine's hockey helmet, to her mother's unexpected labor, and she really didn't know even that?
What's your last name?
Sawyer.
Wynne Sawyer, she murmured.
Thanks for your help, Wynne, David said robotically. He was trying to call the hospital on Carmen's cell phone. Her battery was almost gone. What's yours? Wynne asked her. They were in their own world.
Lowell?
How do you do, Carmen Lowell? She smiled at him gratefully. Ask me later. By Baltimore, they were flying down 95 at just as many miles per hour. Carmen was incensed when a siren started blaring behind them. Wynne groaned.
Oh, you're joking, Carmen said.
Wynne pulled onto the shoulder. Carmen opened her door.
Carmen, no!
Both Wynne and David were yelling at her. You're not supposed to get out of the car! Suddenly a policeman was yelling at her over his bullhorn. It made her angrier. She slammed the door and crossed her arms over her chest.
My mother is in the hospital about to have a baby without her husband, and you are holding us up!
She practically exploded. After an impassioned chat with the policeman, Carmen got back in the car. Wynne looked a bit shell-shocked. He and David both looked defeated, as though expecting tickets and fines of hundreds of dollars, and also to go to jail.
He said he was sorry, Carmen reported instead. Go ahead.
What? Both Wynne and David yelled at her.
Wynne, go,
she said, and Wynne obliged.
He offered us an escort, but I said no,
Carmen continued once they'd gotten back up to speed.
I told him no, but please radio ahead to his fellow cops and tell them to leave us alone.
Wynne was trying to hold back his smile. Carmen couldn't think about whether she was being good Carmen or not. She couldn't keep track anymore. David was shaking his head. Wynne, this girl is a force of nature. Wynne cast a sideways look at Carmen. I'm getting that impression.
We need some help here.
Lauren and Minerva, the labor and delivery nurse, had pulled Tibby aside.
I'm not getting through to her,
Lauren added, like Tibby didn't know that.
Aren't you the professionals?
Tibby felt like screaming at them.
Aren't you supposed to know how this goes? I'm 17, I'm not even supposed to be here.
Minerva cleared her throat. She was a stocky Filipina.
This isn't a medical issue. It's an emotional issue. Do you know what I'm saying?
You mean Christina's freaking because her husband isn't here?
Tibby asked impatiently. She was tired. She was scared.
Yes, Lauren said. And she doesn't want to let the baby go. She's got to release it. She's got to make the leap. We need to help her so she feels safe.
Tibby knew a thing or two about leaps. She turned and strode back to Christina. She felt like a soldier going back into battle. She'd already done the sensible thing of putting a pair of hospital scrubs over the traveling pants, which she still wore from the night before. She prayed they would bring Christina some of their magic by association, but she wasn't crazy enough to leave unwashable pants uncovered in such a circumstance. Christina was fighting, and all in a rush she reminded Tibby powerfully of her daughter. Like Carmen, Christina was a fighter, all right, and also like her daughter, she was fighting to total destruction. Tibby got on the bed. She held Christina by her shoulders. Inside herself, Tibby made Christina a promise. If you leap, I will. We'll do it together. Tibby could be a fighter too. At least she could try. She propped Christina up on her pillows. She held Christina's face between her hands. Tina, I know it's hard. You don't want to let go. I know how it feels. I mean, not having a baby. Obviously, I haven't had a baby, but... Okay, she was getting off track. To her amazement, she saw a look of mirth flit through Christina's eyes. Here and then gone. If Christina could even consider laughing at Tibby, then maybe they were in business. David and Carmen are coming, and they want to see this baby so bad, and the baby wants to come out, so you gotta do it. Tibby figured she would just talk. Christina was listening to her now. Her body was shaking from head to toe, but she was listening. Lauren and Minerva had their latex gloves on. They were positioning themselves at the foot of the bed for the main attraction. Christina allowed them to pull her onto her back. Her knees were bent. She was in position. Christina let out a whimper. She was bearing down, crumpling up her face. Let go. You can do it. I know you can. You're Carmen's mom, right? You can do anything, right?
Tell her to push, Lauren muttered. She needs to push or we're all in trouble here.
Tina, push! Tibby said it so loud she felt her eyeballs rattling. You can do it! Get that baby out of there, would you? Tibby didn't even care what she was saying because Christina was listening. Christina was clinging to Tibby now, holding her tight around her neck, looking for strength. It made Tibby feel strong. You know how much we love you. You know how happy David is going to be to see this baby. Just picture Carmen's face! Tibby was just as hysterical as Christina, but Christina was pushing now, and both Lauren and Minerva looked nearly delirious with relief.
Tibby, I'm pushing,
Christina whimpered. You are unbelievable. You are a star. You are the hero. You are the bomb. Tibby was shouting. She was beyond herself. Somewhere back there was self-consciousness, and here, right up here, was she.
Tibby!
Christina cried. She was getting some control now. Tibby kept right on yelling and screaming the dumbest, silliest things. She wasn't even listening to herself anymore. Contractions came, and with each came a push. Minerva and Lauren were shouting their encouragement too, but the world had shrunk into just the two of them, Tibby and Christina, a funny pairing most every other day of the year. Christina kept her eyes fixed on Tibby's very pupils, and Tibby did not blink. As long as she could keep Christina right there with her, she could make a difference.
I see the baby's head. I feel it, Lauren shouted.
Oh my God, did you hear that? Tibby thundered. She can feel the baby's head. Christina smiled, a real honest-to-God smile.
The baby is right there, right there.
Tibby was beside herself. She had Christina's shoulders in her hands, then her face.
You got it, you know that?
I got it,
Christina cried. She was coming to life.
I feel it, Lauren said. I feel the hair. Tina, your baby has hair,
Tibby screamed. Can you believe it? Christina looked like she liked the idea of a baby with hair.
Carmen had hair, she said faintly, when she was born.
Well, lucky thing that is. I love hair. Hair is great!
Tibby was giddy now. She pushed long, sweaty strands of Christina's hair off of her neck.
One more push and this head is out, Lauren said.
She left Tibby to her own insane translation.
Tina, one more big one. Biggie. Big, big, big push. Don't you want to meet your baby?
Christina went all out. She screamed bloody murder. Her face turned dark purple.
And it's a baby, Lauren shouted.
One more gigantic push and the rest of the baby followed the head. Tibby was afraid to look down because it was all pretty damn gory. But Lauren raised this wriggling, slimy, purple little body up. Tibby could barely breathe. The baby waved its hands and let out a cry. It was a very tiny person, a real person, who had hands to wave and a cry to cry. Lauren landed the purple body on Christina's chest, and Christina sobbed. She held her baby and cried. Tibby watched in wonder and cried too. The professionals did their professional stuff between Christina's legs. Then they cut the cord, weighed the baby, and did a few other medical things. Then the baby, now more pink than purple, arrived back in Christina's arms. Christina held the baby to her breast, and Tibby knew it was done. Christina's little world remained at two, but the second one wasn't Tibby anymore. That was as it should be, sad and happy at once. Slowly, Tibby unfolded her limbs and climbed off the bed. She wanted to leave quietly to let Christina have her unadulterated joy. But before she did, she planted a kiss on Christina's head. "You kicked ass," she whispered. It wasn't quite the wording of a Hallmark card, but it did express her true feelings. Near the door, she bumped into Lauren, bustling about. Lauren paused. "Tibby, you have an unorthodox coaching style, but it is very effective. Would you be available for future labors?" Lauren was half laughing, but Tibby could see she'd been crying too. She was wiped out. "No way." Tibby stopped. She needed to know something. It felt important, like her future suddenly hung on the answer. "Hey, Lauren."
"Yeah?"
"Don't you get used to this? I mean, haven't you done it hundreds of times?" Lauren pushed her hair behind her ears. Her purple liner was smudged. Her face was shiny with sweat.
"Yes," she looked at her hands. "But no, it's a miracle. It's different every single time." To love another person is to see the face of God. Victor Hugo. The three of them, Carmen, David, and Wynne, crashed into labor and delivery with such speed and force you would have thought they were each having a baby of their own. Tibby's was the first familiar face they saw. She was wearing hospital scrubs with a lot of scary-looking stains, standing in the hall with a bewildered expression. As soon as she saw Carmen, she burst into tears.
"You have a baby," she screamed.
"We do?
Oh my God." David was darting around trying to find Christina.
"Over here." Tibby grabbed him by the shirt and pulled him into a room. It was a hospital room, and of course it featured a bed. The bed featured a flushed woman in a pale pink gown, and she in turn featured a tiny, blanket-wadded bundle topped by a knit hat the size of a tennis sock. Carmen was surrounded by shouts and yells and exclamations of surprise and joy, so many and so voluble that she couldn't tell which one came from whom, not even if it came from her own throat. She let David beat her to the bed, but she was a fast second. With expansive arms, she pressed herself on her mother and this baby, and even David. Christina was laughing and sobbing, and Carmen felt her own breaths coming out in those same general types of contortions.
"We have a baby."
David pulled away a few inches to try to get a grasp on the situation. "Right?" Christina was the Madonna now, calm and wise. She laughed at his tortured face.
"Yes, this one is ours."
Tears were coursing down David's face. He needed to make sure of Christina before he grappled with the idea of this baby of his.
"Christina, I am so sorry. I don't know how."
Christina pressed her hand to his face.
"Don't say anything else about that. I had Tibby. We have a beautiful, healthy baby."
She looked at Carmen.
"You too, Nena. Right now, I have everything on the earth that I want."
With trepidation, Carmen and David both peered at the tiny thing.
"Do you want to know what it is?" Christina asked.
Carmen was so overwhelmed she'd forgotten about that whole issue. That had mattered to her once, hadn't it?
"It's a boy,"
Christina said joyfully.
"Oh!"
Carmen let out another scream, but she thoughtfully directed it away from her mother's ear.
"We have a boy."
David cried some more.
Carmen looked over her shoulder at the door of the room. She wanted to share this deep pleasure with Tibby and Wynn, but both of them had gone. Carmen realized she needed to find them. She also needed to give her mother and David and their baby a moment together. She backed up a little, seeing the three of them framed in a triangle. Her mother's face radiated such relief and joy that Carmen felt her own face pressing itself into that same shape without even thinking. Her connection was so overpowering, she felt like her mother's face was her own, her mother's heart was beating with hers, her feelings were the same. And she remembered the thing about being able to feel someone else's joy and knowing that you loved them. Good and great Carmen. This is a day for miracles. Put on the pants and take one for your very own. All my love, Tibby. When Carmen found the traveling pants neatly folded with the note right outside the door to her mother's hospital room, she raced into the bathroom and pulled them on. Then she took the elevator up to geriatrics. Wynn stood by the vending machines. He was searching his pockets for change. It so happened that neither of them had eaten anything but corn nuts in many hours. Her impulse was to hug him, and she didn't give herself the time to chicken out. She just threw her arms around him. "Thank you so much, Wynn," she exclaimed with a full throat. "Thank you for everything." "I'm sorry we didn't get to her in time," Wynn said into her hair. His arms had made their way around her, too. "I think it's okay. I think everything is okay now." "Hey, I didn't mean to disappear before. I just didn't want to get in the way of your family and everything," he explained. "I know, but I needed to see you." She pulled away a little to give him some room. He didn't seem to want to take it. He put his face back into her hair, pressing his cheek against her ear. "I need to see you too," he murmured. He held her closer. She let her body relax into his, feeling his breathing. She felt his backbone under her palms. Her heart was beating only a few inches from his. "I need to say something to you," she said over his shoulder. He lifted his head. He let her back up from him a little. He had a look on his face that said it was girding for disappointment. "There's this thing I've been worrying about, and I have to set it straight." His look of apprehension grew. She breathed out. "I think you might think I'm a good person, and I wanted to let you know that I'm not. I am mean and selfish most of the time." He tipped his head, confused. "You are too good for me," she explained. "That's impossible." "No, seriously, Wynn, you are a good person, and I'm only pretending to be one. I've given you this false impression that I'm selfless and kind, and I'm not." Wynn raised his eyebrows. "God, that's a relief. You may think I'm good, but I was starting to feel pretty intimidated." "Really?" "Oh, yeah." "I got $8.50 an hour to babysit Valia." She figured she might as well go for full disclosure. "Man, you deserved $100. She laughed. "Funny thing was, I ended up really caring about her. That part was free," she added. He studied her for a long moment, a quizzical look in his eyes before he opened his mouth. "I used to be fat." Carmen felt her eyebrows floating upward. "Excuse me? I used to be fat." Wynn shrugged. "I was the fat kid. Since we're uncovering our inner selves, I might as well throw that in." She couldn't help glancing over his body in case there was 100 pounds she had forgotten to notice. There wasn't. "The summer I was 13, my parents sent me to fat camp. The next summer I grew 6 inches and got serious about swimming. But still, a fat kid lives inside me." Carmen tried to fit this piece into the puzzle of Wynn. It did fit in a funny way. He cleared his throat. "So as I see it, I'm the pretender. You're too good for me." "That's impossible," she said. He moved closer again. He looked in her eyes for a long time. Then he tugged most intimately on a belt loop of the pants. "If you're too good for me, and I'm too good for you, what does that mean? We're just right?" He smiled. "Can I?" He wanted to put his arms around her again. "Please." In front of the candy machine, under the glare of fluorescent hallway lights, surrounded by the smell of old people, he put his lips on hers. He kissed her soft and slow at first, and then deeper. He buried his head in her neck. He pushed her hair aside and kissed her there. She let out a small sigh.
"I've wanted to do this for so long," he murmured into her ear.
She said. She found his lips again with hers. With abandon, she kissed him. Perhaps for the first time ever, she kissed without a single thought about how it was, or what it was, or what it meant. She kissed from the inside. An old lady wheeled out of her room and caught them in the act.
"Can you two lovebirds take that somewhere else?" she clucked.
Carmen and Wynne both started laughing, running for the elevators. They held hands as they descended and as they strode through the lobby. Carmen walked and squeezed his hand, and suddenly she had the strangest impression that good Carmen walked before her, a few feet in front of her like a ghost, a glistening spirit. This was a day for miracles. Carmen overtook that spirit. She walked right into good Carmen and absorbed her into her soul. Let her fight it out with bad Carmen if she needed to. And thus, the hospital doors opened and whole Carmen emerged, newly born into the world.
My shoe is off, my foot is cold. I have a bird I like to hold. Dr. Seuss. Tibby wasn't done leaping yet. Dazed, in the fading light, she stumbled down Connecticut Avenue. Cars rushed by, people went around. Tibby felt like she'd been sucked into a wormhole of heightened experience and then spat back out into the regular world. The world was regular, but she wasn't regular anymore. The wormhole happened to be pretty messy. Back at the hospital, she'd washed her hands and face and shed her stained gown. She'd taken off the pants and made away with just the pair of scrub pants on her legs. She hoped she wouldn't get arrested for it. Still, she felt sticky. She didn't want to think about that too much. She needed to find Brian. She didn't want to get comfortable with the ground yet. She knew he'd be at home, at her home. She pointed herself in the right direction. A block from her house, she saw him walking toward her. She didn't question that. It was one of those days. They didn't run into each other's arms or anything. He walked toward her, and when he reached her, she turned 180 degrees so they were walking in the same direction. They walked like that for a while. She reached for his hand. He held on. "I have an idea," she said.
"Okay," he said.
He didn't ask what it was. He was willing to go along. They walked blocks and blocks and then up a long hill up to Rockwood Pool. Then they step-jumped over moving water and then ascended that long staircase. By the time they got to the fence, it was dark, and they were good and high. A high place was what you needed for a leap. "Here's where it's good to climb up." She pointed to the break in the barbed wire. Brian seemed to think that made sense. She led the way, he followed. For such a chicken, she really was a pretty good climber. She jumped the last 5 or so feet to get herself in the right spirit. He appeared gracefully by her side. "You ready?" she asked.
"I think so," he said faithfully, even though he didn't know what she was talking about.
She began unbuttoning her shirt, and his eyes widened slightly. She cast it off. She was wearing a pretty bra. That was nice. She saw her skin glowing in the warm evening air. She pulled off the aqua green scrubs. This was new. She slipped them off and folded them carefully. Her underpants were pink and not embarrassing. Brian's eyes glanced off her and then back on. They were careful, surprised, hopeful, and longing. There was that too. He was looking for permission to let his eyes stay on her, and with her eyes she gave it. "Now you," she said. He took off his own shirt and jeans in a matter of seconds. He left them in a pile. His skin glowed just as brightly above and below the boxers that she herself had picked out for him, 3 pairs for $9 at Old Navy. She hadn't realized she'd be seeing them again in this context. She drew in a sharp little breath. She had pictured him in her mind many times before. This was better. She held his hand again. They let their eyes run over each other unchecked. What was there to hide anymore? She didn't want to hide anything. She led him to the edge. She picked the deep end on purpose. They stood side by side, their toes curled over the edge. She looked at him, right in his eyes, and he looked in hers. This was going to be fun. One, two, three, and so they jumped together. Bridget's body felt better. Dramatically ill, dramatically better, that was her all over. Learning about the birth of Carmen's baby brother gave her great joy. The news came like a dash of cold, fresh water on her soul. She spent almost a week's pay sending flowers and balloons to Christina. But still, her heart hurt. She wanted to see Eric. She needed to see him. She craved his presence, but he was gone. Saturday, he disappeared without a trace. He wasn't in his cabin. He wasn't in the dining hall for 3 meals in a row. Finally, she sucked it up and went to Joe. "I seem to have lost my partner," she said, trying to sound casual.
"You like him now, do you?"
Joe said smugly. She felt like smacking him. "Do you know where he went?" She couldn't bring herself to say Eric's name.
"No idea," said Joe.
She tapped her bare foot against the floor planks of the main office. "Do you know when he'll be back?"
"He better be back by Monday," he said. "We've got a tournament starting."
She hated Joe at this moment, San Jose earthquakes or no. He was a guy who rode his own agenda hard, and he didn't care about yours. "Did he say anything to you?"
"He said he had to take off for a couple days. That was it."
Bridget stalked away angrily. She practically screamed when a chunk of the pine floor dug itself deep into her big toe. Why didn't she wear goddamn shoes? What was the matter with her? Where had Eric gone? Why? Did he need to get away from her? What had happened between them? That evening, she tried running, but she felt weak. She couldn't eat. She called Lena, Carmen, and Tibby on the common phone in the staff lounge and left messages for all of them. That made her feel panicky. Why couldn't she find them? She felt terribly alone. She thought to call Greta, but she didn't know how to get her feelings up and over the transom. How could she explain? Eric wasn't her boyfriend. He wasn't her anything. Why did she feel like she needed him so desperately? She sat on the dock at the lake and watched the clouds thicken. She wished it would rain hard and long and clear everything away. Rain never came when you asked for it. She couldn't sit. She paced. She kicked a soccer ball around an empty field. The lightning in the distance wasn't the real thing.